Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, welcome to Kernels. I'm Christopher Houghton. I'm culture editor at The Independent. I'm going to be bringing this new podcast to you about every fortnight for as long as they'll let me. Today I'm pretty excited that our first guest is Matthew McConaughey, but before we get to that, I just kind of want to explain a little bit about what this is, what it's going to be like, why I'm doing it. So I've been writing about film for about 8 years now, and I enjoy the heck out of it, but I get that with long form stuff, it's hard to read online. You know, you've got the screen in front of you, you're scrolling through it, for some reason your attention span tends to just drop off after about 5 paragraphs. So I thought, what's a way we can talk more at length about film, and just podcasts seem like a good fit. So my hope is that you'll enjoy these and you'll be able to stick it on your phone and then put your phone away. Maybe you're on the bus, maybe you're getting on the subway, you're heading to and from work, and you'll just be able to kind of, yeah. And I'm keen for everyone to bring up any of their own thoughts and ideas and questions around film. So yeah, hopefully this is a space where we can just discuss film in a little bit more detail at length. So essentially the thinking behind this podcast was that it would be kind of more of a deep dive into like the minutiae of making a film. I think that's what fascinates people, you know. We want to know what's actually like being there on set, doing all those takes. What's the mental toll? What's the relationship between everyone involved? And, you know, I kind of want to get into, with be it with actors or directors or cinematographers, whoever I'm talking with, how they feel about the process. Does it make them feel good? Do they feel satisfied when they've wrapped the film? Do they feel satisfied once they've edited it? Do they feel satisfied if they're just brought in to do a day's acting and then disappeared, never to go to the set again, you know, and kind of broach some of those topics. So don't worry, I'm never going to be asking anyone like, oh, what was it like to work with so-and-so, or I don't know, trying to crack jokes with them. It's not going to be that kind of thing, but hopefully it will throw up some interesting, just some insight into how a film is put together. And we've called it Kernels partly just because I don't know how long this thing is going to be week to week. You know, 1 week I may be like talking to someone for an hour and a half. Another week it might just be me or me and a colleague just shooting the shit about film. You know, just a kernel of a podcast really. And I like that idea. You know, in 2017 things don't have to be a set length anymore. You know, even the way Netflix is commissioning stuff now is they can have episodes 1 week which are 5 minutes and then 45 the next. So that's the thinking there. So yeah, it's an interesting time to be starting a podcast for a couple of reasons really. Firstly, the award season's coming up, which for me essentially means catching up on all the films that are going to be nominated that I didn't get around to seeing during the year and the screenings I missed. I saw like a trio of features this year that were all incredibly brutal. I should have really known that going in. So I kicked off on Monday, I saw Tony Erdmann, which is a German comedy. You might have heard about it. The BBC did a poll of 144 critics and asked them what their favourite film of 2016 was. And far and above La La Land and Moonlight and all the ones you're kind of pretty sick of hearing about by this point was this random comedy by Marinade. It's shot in a very blank, straightforward way. It's not particularly cinematic. And despite the way it looks and the fact that it's a comedy, it runs for 2 hours and 40, but it doesn't drag at all. And it's a really unique little film. It's about an estranged father and daughter. She's living in Bucharest and is pursuing a kind of boring corporate job, but she's super invested in it. It's stressing her out. And her dad, who's this kind of a previous generation, just is a bit of a goof. And he essentially just comes into her life and is just playing pranks on her. It's a really, really unusual setup, but despite that, it actually becomes quite profound and is about, I took it to mean, you know, a film shouldn't have like a message as such, but the kind of film themes it explores is just, you know, finding more time to enjoy the simple pleasures in life. And I kind of took it to mean, you know, that you should go to great time and money and length to be an idiot, and that those are actually, that can be the important stuff in life as opposed to the pursuit of wealth. It actually tied in a little bit, I thought, with Patterson, Jim Jarmusch's new film with Adam Driver, which is maybe my favorite film of the year, if you get a chance to see it, which is about a bus driver who's a poet on the side. And again, it's just about enjoying. He finds joy in things like the design of a match, like a box of matches or a lunchbox or a cool glass of beer after a long day's work. So yeah, they feel kind of related, those films, and are both at odds with kind of with social media and the overload of information that we all have to deal with nowadays. And I think that's why they resonated with me, and I think why they will do with a larger audience. I don't think Tony Erdman's necessarily gonna do much this award season. It should get a nomination for Best Foreign Language Film. I think that the award will probably end up going to Elle, Paul Verhoeven's film, which is also really good and really deserving. But yeah, it's definitely one of my favorites. And then on Wednesday, I saw Jackie. Probably not so much. I had really high expectations going into it. All my colleagues had been to see it the day before. They loved it, like were raving about it, but it did nothing for me. I don't know. It was kind of painful, you know. By the time the credits rolled, I was just like, okay, it's time to go home now. This didn't really leave any kind of impact on me. There wasn't that moment, you know, where you're sat there in the chair like, fuck, that was a lot to take on, you know. It just played itself out without really. So it's Pablo Larraín's new film, obviously about Jackie O, and it's kind of set on the days following JFK's assassination. And it's essentially just her being in grief for a really long period of time. It's shot beautifully. Like, Natalie Portman is incredible in it. I have no doubt she'll go on to collect awards for her performances, and I wouldn't begrudge her that in the slightest. She's, the way she moves and holds herself is incredible. She's really created a separate being from herself in it. She kind of moves around like a Barbie doll, and the way her facial features move is if they've kind of been like held up by fairies. She's got some interesting stuff going on in that part, and all credit to her. But outside of that, and outside of the quite beautiful cinematography, it just doesn't really do much. It kind of starts to nudge at these topics and these themes about like history and how it's recorded and how it remembers the people involved in it, and also what it's like to be the spouse of someone who's hugely famous and hugely influential. And they're all completely valid and interesting themes, but it never really actually tackles them, for me anyway. And then I capped off the week with, I just decided to go and see Manchester by the Sea on a whim. There was a showing down the road for me, and it's starting in like 10 minutes. So in the middle of a bright Saturday afternoon, I went in a quiet cinema and just watched this very, very intense, quite brutal film about grief. Casey Affleck stars in it. It's Kenneth Lonergan directed it, and Casey Affleck is phenomenal in it. He plays, I mean, there's a twist in it that I'm not going to spoil, but let's just say his character's gone through some shit, some really difficult stuff to deal with. And despite that, he plays the character with, you get a sense that he's sad and he's taking on a lot. There's a lot of burden on him, but he never overplays it. His character lashes out on occasions, but most of the part, you kind of feel this depression kind of weighing under him, that just is beneath him as he walks around his day. And it's it was a lot to take on as a film, but it was really clever. So it's always an interesting time for film this time of year. I mean, yeah, the award ceremonies are a little bit stupid. Do they really ever mean anything anymore? Maybe not, but it's still kind of just nice to get. I can't help but get wrapped up in them each and every year. Then on a personal level, I'm excited. I'm excited by film at the moment. Excited to start this podcast because I just wrapped my debut feature film, which was a ridiculously involving and interesting and fascinating experience. You know, I went on it in the first day of shooting, not really knowing what the fuck I was doing, just kind of winging it a little bit. And then by the end of it, just felt like I'd learned so much by the end of the final shoot. And as well as just being like a phenomenal experience, it's definitely made me better at what I do. I don't know really, now I've done it, I don't really know how you can live with yourself in a way, writing about film without having ever tried to be a part of it and tried to do it yourself. I feel like I was a bit of a charlatan before, but and now I understand it a lot better. And And I think it's made me write about it, write about films and review films better. And I think hopefully it's made me better at interviewing as well, because actually I understand kind of what they're going through and what they're dealing with and the issues on their mind when they're on set. And I'd recommend anyone who out there who kind of has a thought in mind, has a screenplay knocking around or any dreams to make a film, to just go out there and do it. Like, I was listening to Judd Apatow recently, and he was saying, someone asked him, like, how do you be a director? And he said, you just go out and direct. And I think it's good advice. And you go out there and you make it, and maybe it doesn't work out, but the experience itself is just incredibly involving. You know, I was one point where I really needed a glass of water, like, badly. I was dying of thirst, and it would have taken me like 5 seconds to get one. The tap was like 10 feet away, but I had to dispatch a runner to get it for me, just because I was that busy. And the runner, in any other time in life, you ask someone to do that for you, you'd be like, you diva, like, go and get yourself a glass of water. But in that moment, they understood how busy it was and how much I had going on, and just got it, no questions asked. And there was something nice about that, and being that kind of present in a moment. And speaking of being present in a moment, it brings me on quite nicely to Matthew McConaughey, our first guest today, who's a guy who just seems to have such an enthusiasm both for life and the filmmaking process. And it's a thing I talk to him about, and he just seems excited about the world. And you get that sense in his performance. He's very corporeal, you know, you're aware of his body and his movements. And I was looking forward to talking to him. I was a bit nervous for the first time in a while. I feel like I do a lot of interviews, and I kind of hadn't felt that way in maybe a couple of years, but I guess this guy was kind of an idol to me, so there was a little bit of apprehension there. But as you would expect, he was charming, really laid back and relaxed, and keen to talk, and keen to really get to the kind of the big issues in life and in film. We spoke about the film Gold mostly, which he's got coming out soon. It's kind of if you check out the trailer, it's kind of a Wolf of Wall Street kind of vibe going on. There's a struggling Wall Street guy. He's got Matthew McConaughey's character has like a massive belly. He's balding. He's down on his luck. He's wearing like a cheap $2 suit, and he kind of strikes upon gold in a remote part of the world, and suddenly he has the power on Wall Street, and it's about how he negotiates that, and not even his pursuit for money, but his pursuit for, I don't know, he's got a thing to prove and for notoriety, and he loves gold. He just loves gold. Anyway, I hope you enjoy our chat, and I hope to see you for the next episode of this podcast in a couple of weeks. Please do subscribe to the podcast. You can access it through iTunes or any podcast apps, and we're also on Twitter and Instagram, just @Kernels. So yeah, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So I was kind of thinking on the way over here that out of pretty much any actor I can think of, when I'm watching you act, you just look like you're having the best time. You look like you're enjoying the shit out of doing that scene.
Well, that's good to hear, because
Most of the time, I'd have to agree with you. If I find a role that has as much for me to grab onto as like Kenny Wells and Gold, I was excited for Monday morning to go back to work. I was nervous about every scene because I was like, oh, look at what this is and what it can be. Look how many variations we can give on the day. And so that is a joy at whatever capacity. That's a joy for me to do.
Yeah. And do you find the acting process like quite cathartic? I know the little bits of acting I've done, I've always felt it's a bit like going to the gym for your mind, and afterwards you feel kind of drained, but in quite a pleasing way.
In a pleasing way, yeah. There's that good exhaustion where you go, oh, I think I really told the truth as well as I could today, all day long. I felt loose. I was curious. I wasn't in my head, you know. And then you put together a good day, and you hopefully put five or six together, and you got a good week. And you come back, and you try to knock it down one scene at a time and put together another week. And hopefully they're going to tap you on the shoulder a couple of months down the road and go, you're done. And that's when I really get – that's when I go have the 19-hour nap.
Yeah,
at the very end.
And you've left everything else.
Yeah.
And so once you've signed up for a project, once you've read through the script, how do you go about building a character? Like, does it start with the voice? Is it where does it come from?
No. It starts with, one, what's the page give me? And a character that's part biographical like this, then it is, well, where can I go do research on the real man? Then it is, hey, director, producers, are we trying to tell a true-to-life biography here, or how much are we saying based on, or how much are we trying to really emulate the man in the times? After I make those decisions and use whatever research facts I can get, I then go to the imagination, and this took me to a lot of the Kenny Wellses of the world that I was privy to growing up with my father. My father was a salesman and had a lot of Kenny Wells in him. He did deals with a lot of people who were very much like Kenny Wells, guys that were hustling day to day, guys that didn't have a ticket to the American dream, guys who were going to be entrepreneurs. The only way they were going to make it was to create their own way. And most of them didn't make it. This is a story about a guy who did make it.
Yeah. And so it's based on a true story, but Kenny Wells didn't exist, right?
His name is David Walsh.
David Walsh. And was it very much based on him, though, the character? Did you spend a lot of time with him, or was it interpreted quite
well? He's since passed away. He died of a heart attack about 20 minutes after getting hit in the head by a large blunt object,
right,
which may have to do with some of the people that you'll meet in this film. I did, from the research I got, I pulled what facts I could use, and then there was also folklore that was passed down. And that's when it gets tricky, but also fun, is you have to decipher through the folklore of, well, what's true, what can I use? What, and then maybe it's one thing they say. Maybe it's a poem along the way that can color a character. After that, it was for me researching and going back and remembering these guys that I met, these guys that I saw. Now, how much of my memory of these Kenny Wellses that I met was exactly factual or not? Well, that's debatable too, because partially some of these men, I was 12 years old. So I was seeing them through a prism of a 12-year-old eyes, and I'm sure I was romanticizing the event and the men that were larger than life, my father who was larger than life at that time. But that a lot of times I've found that the impression of an instance or the impression of someone can almost be more true or more of a creative outlet than getting in on the 110-millimeter lens and really getting the details.
Yeah. It's interesting because I've always wondered whether doing something based on a true story in some ways could feel creatively limiting because you're not breaking out that character into however you see fit. It's got to be faithful to how a certain person was, but it's a very different process.
I've had that experience where it was a biography and I felt such responsibility to emulate exactly who that character was that maybe I didn't feel the wings. I didn't feel like I ever set flight. I may have done a very responsible performance. I may have connected all the dots and have been, you know, historically accurate, but did the spirit of the man take flight? Well, that would be debatable after you saw the performance. But in this, I understood who this guy was after the very first read of the script, more so than any other character I've ever played.
Yeah. You mentioned wings, reminded me of the line in the movie about the bird with no feet, sleeps on the wind.
Tennessee Williams.
Yeah.
Bird with no feet sleeps on the wind. That was the poem that I held in my proverbial pocket throughout the entire performance. You know, a guy like Kenny Wells, if he ever does land, if he did get the gold or did get the money, if he pulled it all off and it was over, he's sort of dead. You know, that's why the ending is ambiguous as it is.
Yeah.
Kenny's not a guy who's going to get the gold, get the money, and retire and go play golf. He's not going to. He's not that guy. He's going to find some other thing to pull off, whether it's a real deal or a scam or something. And that's the difference of gold and money. And Kenny talks about it. There's a difference between gold and money. Kenny was never interested in the money. The gold is the chasing down of the dream, his dream. The gold is pulling it off. Mm. The gold is sticking it to the man along the way. The gold is making it happen when the rest of the world says, no way, it's impossible, it can't happen. Yeah. That's the gold.
Yeah, it's the chase for him, and by that virtue, it's never going to end. He's not going to feel satisfied and want to settle down. And I was thinking, because obviously for this role, you had the gut, you had the hair, we were like receding right way back. I was watching that video, have you seen, of Dustin Hoffman talking about Tootsie? And he was saying that when they made him up to look like a woman, that it made him cry because he imagined that he would be a beautiful woman. He was so shocked to see that he wasn't. He couldn't handle it. I was thinking when you got done up and you looked at yourself in the mirror, did you think, damn, that's what, if I let myself go, or like the, you know, when I age, that's what I'm going to, I guess when you're an actor, you have to let go of shame and self-consciousness and all these things, but was it still hard to see yourself?
Well, people have
like
said
that?
To me, like, oh my gosh, you had to drop all vanity to do this. Hey, look. I'm gonna flip the script and redefine how I'm very vain. I'm vain enough to, if I wouldn't have gone all the way and become Kenny Wells, I'd be sitting here embarrassed right now. So I'm vain enough to say I didn't want to be embarrassed. That was what the character, you know, became. That's who he was. So no, I never had the word damn before any of that. I looked in the mirror and I was like, that's Kenny. Mm-hmm. And after a big weekend and, you know, putting on some more pounds or getting a little more rugged, waking up Monday morning, it wasn't waking up Monday morning with regret. It was like, ah, you're doing your work.
Yeah.
And that's the pleasure in what I get to do. You know, if I find a character, not every character offers up the chance to commit this much in mind, body, and spirit. This one did. And man, that's wonderful as an actor when you get that much to dive into.
Yeah. And I know, so over your career, you had this period where you were maybe making films that you didn't want to be making as much as now, this really rich vein of incredible stuff. Do you think that's kind of affected you as an actor and made you a better actor, having had it not all there on a plate from kind of day one?
I don't know, because I was, you know, even back when I was doing only romantic comedies, I was enjoying those.
Mm.
They're just a different type of movie. They're what I like to call Saturday characters. You know, they're built on being buoyant and light. Whereas a drama is just the opposite. The ceiling in the basement, the threshold is much wider in a drama, because at every choice in a drama, you're hanging your hat on humanity. You're hanging your hat on what's the truest thing for this character. You can't be that honest in a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
If you get that mad or that happy or laugh that loud in a romantic comedy, you can throw it off. You know, I've always had this great line: if you drop anchor in a romantic comedy, you sink the ship. Well, in the drama, they're built for dropping anchor. They're built. I was able to show as much joy as I feel, you know, through Kenny Wells, as much pain as I feel through Kenny Wells, and that's how drama's built.
Mm. So it's just a search for truth, then, really. And with these kind of roles, you feel like you're getting closer to it.
That's the great thing about a drama.
Mm.
And I think some of them, they allow for just as much or more humor. I think this film's quite funny.
Yeah.
You know, in a lot of ways. It's a wild ride by a real guy.
Yeah. It's a very physical role, isn't it? He's moving around a lot. There's a lot of your body kind of involved in it.
He's a consumer.
Yeah.
Kenny Wells is a consumer. He's very physical, but he's consuming life. He's consuming joy. He's consuming drink. He's consuming smoke, food. He's consuming everything. Everywhere he goes, he feels like he's hosting.
Mm. And when you're on set... When you start filming the first setup for the day, do you find that it takes a little while to ease into a role, or are you there from take one? It's already present, kind of.
Well, it's different, you know. I mean, I hope to feel like I'm seeing the guy from the inside out from the first day. And what I like to say to myself is, when I walk on set, press record. Let's go. You know, let's not warm up. You know, warm up time was for pre-production. But that doesn't always happen. I mean, sometimes I don't find my guy or feel like I know him from the inside out until after the first day or the first week or 2 weeks in. I've had roles where I've gone and didn't feel like I found my guy until the shooting was over. Mm. With this one, I knew this, felt like I knew the guy from the inside out after the very first read. And that was, that's so much fun when it happens that early. Because then I'm walking around for the months leading up and I'm seeing the world as much as I can through his eyes. And I'm getting informed by my daily happenings of who Kenny Wells is because I'm seeing it through his eyes. Yeah. So that's when it's really fun.
Yeah, it must be exciting when you have that immediate connection to the character and you just want to go out there and,
you know. Yeah, and you know it because it's not a, when you understand him or a character that soon, it's not an intellectual exercise. You understand it here first. A lot of times you have to get intellectual to understand and then work that down into your instinct. But this one I instinctually said, I know who the man is.
Yeah.
Early.
Yeah. And then you've worked in film and TV now. There's so much made about things moving from film to TV, and I don't actually think movies are going anywhere. But does it matter? Is it not just all good content at the end of the day, and we shouldn't obsess so much about whether it's movies or whether it's a series or a limited series?
Well, I think, 15 years ago, there was much more of a taboo going from film, the big screen, to the small screen. That was a demotion, But when True Detective came along, I gave that about 5 seconds of consideration. And because I was like, what are you chasing, McConaughey? You're chasing character and story. Well, boy, this has great character and great story. I don't care what screen it's on. If you chase good character and good story, hopefully you can keep a job and keep working in the movie business and look back at everything and go, yep, however well it did or didn't do, that was a great experience. That was a great character. That was a great story.
Yeah. Cool. And just finally, I have to ask you, going back to The Wolf of Wall Street and your fantastic, fantastic dinner scene in that with DiCaprio, and I read that he said that the whole was something that you do to prepare yourself. And do you still do it?
No? Oh, I still do it. But it's a different tune that I'm humming or beating on my chest for each character. It's a relaxation tool.
Where do the tunes come from for each character?
They come just from the soundtrack of my mind on what it is, what the tone, what the rhythm. It's a way, when I say a relaxation technique, it's a way to get out of my head. You know what I mean? So I was doing that before each take to relax. And then we'd yell action and I would start the scene and I'd stop doing that. Well, we were done that day, and we had done 5 takes. Martin Scorsese was happy, I was happy, Leonardo was happy, and we were moving on. And it was Leonardo's idea. He goes, hang on a second. And he asked me, he said, what are you doing before the take? And I explained what I explained to you, and he goes, well, you want to try that in the scene? I said, sure. So the next take, I did at the beginning of the scene, then we went into the scene, and we got to the end, and I remember thinking, well, now do it again to see if the young Turk, who you just taught sort of what Wall Street is about, see if he's on the same frequency, see if he gets it. And then so we ended up bookending the scene with it, and that was the one take we used.
Yeah, just a way to not overthink, I guess, in the moment when you've got so many distractions around you.
Yeah, and plus you're stepping in, the nerves are high. I'm stepping into, they are already working together for months. I'm stepping in, I've got 2 days' work. You can come in with nerves, so it's a way to get rid of the nerves.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks so much, Matthew, for your time.
Yeah, you got it, man.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.